You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
Are you looking for something fun to do this winter? Want to get away from it all and have an escape? Come on up to the Deer Lodge, where... you can snowmobile, have some tea, sit by the fire, and if you're lucky enough, Wendigo will have a little sample of your flesh. Deer Lodge. Hope to see you soon.
Thou art to be hanged and then burnt over a basket of living cats.
Everybody, welcome to the New World Pictures podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
I can say with 100% confidence, I've never had someone introduce themselves to me by biting my arm.
And Erica.
Was breaking and entering not a thing back then? I just, is that like a newer law?
It's legal in Canada.
Got it. It's just a welcome and rest.
That's right.
Come on in and make yourself so comfortable.
Take a room.
Take a bath here. It's fine.
There's not a lot of hot water, so please don't fill up the tub too much. Please.
Yeah. And joining us for this episode, we have a wonderful guest. She is a podcaster, writer for Rue Morgue, and frequent collaborator with Terrorvision, Yasmina Katita. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for the applause.
Yeah,
we always like to record. It's early, so the crowd is not really. They'll get into it. They're going to get into it.
Yeah.
Right, crowd?
The sun.
There See, we go. Now they're responding. They're a little confident.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I am very excited.
They won't let it go. They won't drop it. This is how excited they are, and they should be excited.
Like, holy shit, a Canadian. I can confirm breaking an entry in Alberta in 1981 is legal.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. There's been some new laws passed since then, maybe, and that's no longer a thing. But yeah, we have you on board for a terrific Canadian horror film released by New World Video. We're talking 1981's Ghost Keeper.
Hell yeah. One of my favorites.
In den indianischen Legenden Nordamerikas gibt es ein Wesen, das Wendigo heißt. Ein Geist, der sich von Menschenfleisch ernährt.
Das ist unglaublich. Seht euch mal das riesige Haus an.
Mark, hier gefällt es mir nicht. Lass uns wieder zurückfahren.
Wir sollten uns das mal ansehen.
Hab nicht das Gefühl, als würden sich die Wochenendbesucher hier tottreten. Scheint niemand da zu sein.
That's right. It did reach
French.
Germany.
That's French Canadian right there. I understood every word.
That's 1981's Ghost Keeper, brought to you by Dexter's Snow Pants. Inside, outside, nothing makes a fashion statement like Dexter's Snow Pants. With a sleek, comfortable fit, Dexter's Snow Pants will make you want to get trapped in the middle of nowhere during a snowstorm. Good for daytime, evening wear, or even taking care of a snow lodge for the rest of your life wear. You'll never want to take Dexter's Snow Pants off. And if you're lucky, you won't ever need to take them off again. So, 1981's Ghost Keeper, directed by Jim Makachuk. He's from the Alberta area. He also co-wrote the script. He previously was a commercials director. This was Makachuk's feature debut, as he explained to MJ Simpson in 2008. He said, quote, "I was working in commercials in the western part of Canada. I was doing it for 3 years, and I just got tired. A friend of mine in Calgary said, let's make a movie, and his friend had a father who owned the hotel. That friend is Doug McLeod, who co-wrote the script with Makachuk, and he would go on to have a career as a producer and production manager, including working as a unit manager for the Alberta filming of Superman 3, amongst other films. Yeah. Now, this is a movie that is one of your favorites, you said, Yasmina. So what is your history with this movie?
So I'm a huge VHS collector and just like cinephile in general. And I'd always heard of this film, but I've only been aware of the New World Pictures release on VHS. And I mean, I've seen it like floating around like eBay like many, many years ago. And I was like, I'll find it eventually. I go thrifting a lot. And one day I came across a tape, and the spine was intriguing to me because, like, as a collector, I focus very heavily on labels, and I'd never seen this label before. And I was like, oh, what is this? So I know the listeners can't see, but I picked it up, and it's a copy of Ghost Keeper.
Wow.
Remember, it's not the New World Pictures release, because that's the one. It's like blue, has like a skull that's like leering over the Deer Lodge Hotel, and yeah, like the Red Code. Is that Red Code release?
It's the Code Red. Yeah, this is the Code Red Blu-ray. Yeah.
And this one, like, I was like, what the fuck is this company? And they're based out of Montreal. They're called Video Veal. And even like on the back, like there's no photos on the back or anything, but the plot is in English and French. And all the information I had, like that was on the back of the box, was the fact that it was distributed in 1982. So I believe that the New World VHS came out in 86.
Correct.
And it's funny because even like I've read the Wikipedia page on this film and IMDb, and none of them mention this Video Veal release. And the cover is just like the picture of like the son who plays like the Wendigo, looking very haggard, like maybe a hobo. And that's it. Like, I was like, oh, this is wild. Like, I've just never seen this release before. And yeah, I just remember like posting it, and like maybe one person was like, oh, I know what that is. But it's very rare that this film comes up in conversation. Not a lot of people have heard of it. I think it is like being a Canadian is an advantage to like knowing this film, possibly. Like, I've never met any Americans that had heard of this film before. And yeah, every time I would post about it, I would just be like recommending it to people. Like, if you really want a atmospheric, like very ominous mood film, that's like a winter isolation horror film, like you've seen The Shining a billion times, you want something right. different, definitely like watch this movie. Like, I've just been like boasting this film for so long. Because even though it does have its issues that we'll like get into later with like the production and everything and changes that occurred, it's I feel like it still has this like creepy as fuck like theme in it. And the first time, I'll never forget the first time I watched this movie, like I was stoned, but I was about to go and I was like terrified. Like the first time you see the old woman, like I was like, this is terrifying. And I also have a personal connection to the film because it was filmed in Alberta and I'm from Alberta and I loathe winter. It's the worst. I moved to Ontario in the late 90s and I was happy to get away from Alberta winters, even though like we have winter here. Alberta winter is different and it's frigid. It's terrible. It's my hell. So it adds to the like the fear of this film when I'm watching it, because that would be my nightmare, like being stuck in the middle of like this remote, desolate, mountainous, wintry area with like literally no escape. So Yeah, that's my story.
I can attest as somebody who's much more of a city person, just getting stuck out in the middle of the snow like they are is certainly terrifying. And it's not something I didn't grow up in that part of Canada or Canada at all. And it absolutely is something is a nightmare for me. So that is
for sure.
100%. Also, like going somewhere and can't access your Blu-ray collection. Come on, that's a nightmare for me. But you're going to talk to three Americans today about this movie. So you can tick that box. You can finally.
Excellent.
But going back to that box really quickly that you shared, Yasmina, mm-hmm. I know, again, listeners, you can't see it, but that box looks so creepy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's right? So eerie, and just having the photo on the front be black and white and the back of it just red with you know, the description is so.
And it's interesting
spooky.
That it would be. This has got. So it creepy. Has to have been released. And we'll get into the release stuff later, but it has to have been released before New World, because New World normally would release their stuff in Canada through Mallo Video at that point in time in 1986.
Yeah, so, the back of the box says 82. So that's when this one came out. And I looked up, like I tried to find as much information as I possibly could about this label, like Video Veal. And like, I think I only found like three other VHS releases.
Huh.
Like, I'm fairly certain this tape is probably pretty rare.
Yeah, but I would have to say.
Right. The photo is like, it's actually like, it is color, but it's faded. But I must have found it for like fucking like $2 or something. Love it.
Well, it has found the right home. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about what this movie is about. Mark, what is Ghost Keeper about?
This movie is about making sure you get enough me time. I mean, you know how it is. You finally get a little time at home, mm-hmm. and people keep stopping by. You know, it's frustrating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Instead of reading the book that you've been wanting to get into, you're making tea for everyone. You're making yourself a sandwich and eating it in front of them. You're hosting when you mm-hmm. want to be aloning, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. This movie introduces a curious option. What if you just killed them?
It's on the table.
That's it.
It wasn't an option. Yeah, you maybe thought option. Of. Maybe you're a person where that's an option you go to immediately. I think for most of us, that's not an option we think of. But this movie says, hey, mm-hmm. maybe this is something you could do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Erica, what is this movie about?
This movie, I agree, Mark, that is a big theme. But another really important, I guess, life mantra that this movie shares is the lengths a store owner will go through to ensure his customers are satisfied. You know, when you visit a Mountaintop General store and, you know, he could tell when they left that he had not provided the customer service that he should have. So he strapped on his winter tennis racket walking shoes, which is, I'm pretty sure that's what they're called. I'm a bit of an outdoor enthusiast myself. He put on those.
Yep, that's what they're
tennis
called.
Tennis rackets for the snow.
For sure.
On his feet. He put on his hat and coat. He packed, I guess, a backpack, maybe a lunch. Mm-hmm. And he headed out to look for them because he knew he had to make things right. Because he did not provide the customer service he should have.
Correct.
Of course they went to the Deer Lodge where they were, of course, getting better service. He had to go apologize, make it right, maybe sell a snowsuit.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, he risked his life. He risked his life to do that.
Sometimes you can even wear racquetball rackets. It
yeah.
just depends
well,
on
your
the
feet
snowfall.
Are smaller. His feet were big, so he had to go tennis. Yep.
I remember when I was a kid in school, we had those tennis racket snowshoe like activity days where we got to wear them and walk around in them, and I was like, I hate this.
I would have hated that too. I would have been like, oh my god.
Also,
I would have had to have enormous ones because I have giant feet.
Mm-hmm. I would probably need snowshoeing is just what you call it. Just
snowshoeing,
which actually doesn't sound any better than tennis racket shoes. So
yeah, snowshoeing. That feels too easy.
Yeah,
I don't think that's what it's called.
That doesn't sound right.
Yeah. I could be wrong.
Seems too obvious.
Yasmina, what is Ghost Keeper about?
Well, it's an interesting question, because what is this movie about, or what was this movie supposed to be about? Could be another question. Mm-hmm. Because James Jim McAchuck definitely had a different vision.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, what ended up happening in the film was not originally supposed to happen, I guess. But I think Ghost Keeper is about listening to women, listening to Jenny.
Mm-hmm.
They should have just listened to fucking Jenny. Mm-hmm. And I love the storekeeper, by the way. That actor's name is Les Kimber. And what a pleasant, adorable man. Offers them coffee. And fucking Jenny is the only one that's nice enough to thank him for the coffee. And the other two, they deserve to be killed because they didn't thank him for the coffee.
Yeah.
In a nutshell. Yeah, definitely. Listen to your sensible woman friend.
Mm-hmm. And always say thank you for free coffee.
Yes. And always say thank you. And listen to rustic storekeepers
and
owners. Listen,
and I think when given advice on a mountaintop, just listen to it. Mm-hmm. Heed it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know? Yeah, definitely.
You know, you don't have to be a know-it-all on the mountaintop.
Yeah. And fear snow.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Just stay away from fucking snow.
Yeah.
Like it's like New Year's Eve and they're all like, oh, let's go to Banff and go on this excursion on snowmobiles in the middle of fucking nowhere. Like, come on.
With nothing, with no supplies, just raw dog in this New Year's Eve. They didn't even have canteens of water. I don't know. No. What do people need for the snow? Where were their tennis racket snowshoes?
Yeah.
Chrissy had a backpack, so we don't really, and we know there was a bottle of wine at some point.
That was Marty held on to that. He brought that.
Mm. But we also know that there were other friends who obviously didn't like these people. And we're like, thank God they're gone.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They all, like, we never see them. They're like off camera. And I guess they must have been staying at a more populous area for New Year's Eve. And there was like a party or something, because when they're gathering around the fire, they do mention that, like, they're like, oh, I wonder if everybody's missing us and wondering where we are. And they're like, well, not you, bitch, because you're fucking annoying with your weird ass story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's why for me, this movie is about when you go on vacation, choose those vacation friends wisely.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because a vacation can ruin your life.
End your life.
it can.
Wise. It's true.
You don't think so because you're having such a good time.
Yeah,
but it can ruin your life.
Yeah,
yeah.
And when the annoying friends say we're going to go snowmobile for a little bit, we'll be back later. Don't be like cool.
Yeah.
Don't ask them what time. Just be like, go hit it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll make it happen.
Mm-hmm. See ya. Yeah. See ya. See ya. Never.
Yeah.
Here's the Letterboxd synopsis. Now, we are on Letterboxd. Are you on Letterboxd, Yasmina?
I should be, but I'm not.
It's perfect that you say that, because most of our guests say the exact same thing.
Really? I have a love-hate relationship with cell phones in general. I just try not to even be on my phone for lengths of time, and people are like, Letterboxd. I'm like, another fucking app I need to fucking do. Like,
yeah. But here is a Letterboxd synopsis. A group of three friends on a snowmobiling trip find themselves stranded at an abandoned lodge isolated in the mountains. So far, so good for Letterboxd. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You never know. You never know. Letterboxd.
Is that it?
No. Though that's tantalizing in and of itself.
Sometimes
right?
with Letterboxd, that's it.
Sometimes it can't be that brief. They discover that an old woman resides in the hotel, along with an evil entity that she is keeping in the basement.
I mean, we don't know that he's evil. That's not fair.
That's true. We don't know enough about him. We don't really get to know him.
Aren't we all a little grumpy when we're hungry? You know?
Yeah. We do know he's hungry. Yeah. We do know that.
He's hungry. She's up there eating sandwiches. Right. And I guess chopping up ham. I don't know. Whatever that was. He's just hungry.
I think it was a deer, right? Because there was a deer
that makes a lot more sense.
It is the deer lodge.
Yep. It could be a deer. It could have been Chrissy. Who knows?
The old name was Hog Lodge.
But then they all got out of the pen. Yeah. And, you know, forget it.
Like, well,
what else they is did around?
They did some focus groups, and people are like, don't like Hog Lodge quite as much.
But we open on this movie on words. Important words for the story. The quote, in the Indian legends of North America, there exists a creature called Wendigo, a ghost who lives on human flesh. These are important words because you will forget about them, but they will explain a character that pops up later on. And then you'll be like, oh, I see why those words were there. But let's take a 45-minute break before we really need to take those words into account. And so instead, we focus on the snowy Alberta mountains and the music of Canadian composer Paul Zaza, who had just written the score for Prom Night and would soon write the scores for My Bloody Valentine and A Christmas Story, amongst other movies.
And Curtains.
Yes. Like, he did so many movies. Incredible. Yeah, he's had quite a career.
I think he reused the music of Ghost Keeper for Prom Night.
Okay, yeah. I think in IMDb, the trivia, which is something I never really trust, they are saying he reused Prom Night music for this, but they're around the same time, so who knows?
Either way, it's a really good atmospheric score.
It is.
I mean, it's really, it fits the movie perfectly.
It is a big part of filling in that atmosphere, and like when you see the mountains and you hear his score, like I think it really sets the mood really, really well. And when it comes to New World movies, you never know but the score. So
it's true. It could have just had a random keyboard that was like ting, plonk, tonk, ting, plonk, plonk.
It has happened. It has happened. And we see our lead couple there on a snowmobile skidoo, Marty and Jenny, soon joined by their friend Chrissy, and they do go to escape the boredom of the lodge, and they're just traveling around. And Yasmina, you mentioned the film gets compared to The Shining a lot, which makes sense. And, you know, it's got a snow lodge and snow and going a bit nuts. But they go to the store and the shopkeeper, like, kind of warns them and gives them the warning, just like you would do in a Friday 13th movie. And somebody says, don't go out to the woods. Mm-hmm. And this guy's like,
you best stay with the roads. These mountains can be tricky.
We can handle ourselves.
Mountains can fool you. They're dangerous.
How can mountains be dangerous? They're so beautiful.
Look, Gramps, we're not going to get lost.
There are worse things out there than getting lost.
Mm-hmm. It gets compared to The Shining a lot, like based on the fact that it's a small cast and that are trapped in a hotel during a blizzard. But The Shining is kind of laid out and you understand what's happening. And Ghost Keeper, I feel, is more mysterious. Like, you don't know what's going on.
Right.
And I feel that it's a much more somber film. Like, it's a lot more gloomy, I guess. And I do have a question for y'all.
Oh, okay.
So you watched the New World Pictures release. Did you watch the Blu-ray or the VHS?
The Blu-ray. We watched the Blu-ray. The Code Red Blu-ray.
Okay, so then the version you watched didn't have that added opening scene, correct? My VHS has that.
Oh.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that.
It is on the Blu-ray. It just isn't in the cut of the film.
Features?
Yeah, it is a special feature. So I did watch the opening. It's much more of a slasher opening, I think, is where what you're talking about. It has much more of somebody getting killed in the woods. It was done without the approval of the director.
I didn't know that. I just it's interesting. Like, that's because this is the copy that I own, I always assumed that like it was on the New World Pictures version. And then as I was working on my essay for the CIP Blu-ray, like I was like, oh shit, I didn't realize that. That just makes my tape even more rare. But the opening it was shot like 2 years later too. And it's the only scene that's not in the winter, and it's in the spring. And you're right, it is much more of a slasher narrative where there's like a guy running in the woods, sun, like fucking like spring, like it's weird, like it doesn't fit at all. But the Wendigo character is like chasing after him. And
I don't know if it follows also the opening words, because it's just a special feature on the disc, so I don't really know how it fit in, but they just...
I think it's after the words.
Okay. Okay. So yeah, it definitely has like, you know, that's when it's like, okay, these slasher films are not going away. Let's make a little bit more of a slasher opening. Whereas yeah. I think what Makichuk really wanted was just that opening on the mountain, listening to the music, getting into Zaza. Mm-hmm. Getting into Zaza, getting your Zaza on. Zaza.
Get Zazad.
Our three main characters, by the way, are played, Marty is played by Murray Ord, who had a brief acting career before he focused on producing and becoming president of the Alberta Film Commission.
Oh.
And Jenny is played by Reva Spire, who had a small role in Cronenberg's Rabid.
Mm-hmm.
And Christy is played by Sherry McFadden in her only role.
Hmm.
They do make it to the lodge, and guess what? They do get snowed in, just like they were warned would happen. Mm-hmm. Gotta listen, guys.
Just wait. Hold on one second here. First off.
Uh-oh.
If I were to give up after three pulls of a snowmobile every time, I would never go snowmobiling. Like, you got to keep yanking on that thing till your arm's about to pull out of its shoulder socket. Then, only then, will that thing start. Okay? That just one. So, Marty gives up way too quick. Second, You can snowmobile while it's snowing. Because
what?
You need snow.
What?
Do snowmobile.
Mark, you're blowing my mind. What are you talking about?
So I just thought those are the two reasons why you have to stay. You have the perfect vehicles for a blizzard.
Right. Yeah. If you were going to, if you're in the snowstorm, the thing you would want, if you're walking around with your giant tennis racket snowshoes, mm-hmm. you're like, well, this sucks. I'm gonna get stuck somewhere. If only right. I had a snowmobile.
Yeah.
Right. Or if you're in an 82 Honda Accord, you're gonna be like, this is a bummer.
Yeah.
But you're in the perfect.
But not an 88, because then you're stoked.
Exactly right. Thank you for picking me up on that. But this is 82. So
yeah. Right. Yeah. You don't that you doesn't know, exist yet. It doesn't they haven't perfected the Accord.
Right. And even though that Ski-Doo 3500 only has one cylinder, it's only 340cc engine. Mark's it does have an electric start, which he could have worked on that a little bit. But, you know, my point is, I feel like Marty wanted them to stay.
I agree.
He was making up excuses.
Marty brings the bottle of wine.
Right.
So he's got a bottle of wine. He wanted this to happen. Now he says like, oh, I should have brought more wine. But it's like, you already brought a bottle of wine on an exploring trip during the day. You always say,
I should have brought more. I should have brought two bottles of Jack. I mean, it's always.
It's always, yeah. But like you clearly left going, well, there could be some drinking going on somewhere along the way.
Yeah.
And a bottle of wine is not something that you're just like, let me just open this up of my Ski-Doo. We can all just go back and forth with this bottle. It's just not that simple. You have to have an opener. You can't just, it's not simple. It's not like a couple bottles of beer. So he wanted something like this to happen.
Just imagining they're on it with wine glasses, like, slow down. Trying to pour it.
Yeah, he definitely had an agenda now that you're mentioning this. Like, and it was to bang Chrissy. For sure.
Oh, for sure.
And he couldn't even finish that. Couldn't even figure out how to get that. I mean, just come on, my guy.
Yeah, he is.
Take off those glorious, gorgeous white boots.
Oh, yeah.
Set the tone, my guy.
I know. Come on. He can't do it. He's incapable. Marty is a waste, as we'll get into.
Yes.
An arrogant waste.
Oh, a very arrogant waste. Yeah. Let's get to, as Yasmina mentioned, we are in Banff, Alberta, near Lake Louise, a deer lodge. The location, the real location, in fact, I believe it still exists.
Yeah, it's actually like, as of this recording, it's closed for renovations because unfortunately there was a fire that destroyed a wing of the hotel. And I was looking it up and I was like, oh my God, I actually kind of like want to stay there one day. And I was like, oh shit. So right now they're closed for renovations. But yeah, Lake,
Jenny didn't replace the battery on the smoke detector. This is on Jenny. That fire's Jenny's fault.
Wow. Hopefully everything's okay in the basement. Producer Harry Cole said this about the location to the Calgary Herald in December of 1980. He said, quote, "It's a producer's dream. It has one location and a controlled environment." That's what he said about the movie. And it is a good location. They obviously came up with the movie around the location, knowing that they had access to it. And apparently they allowed them to have the run of the place for the shooting of the movie.
Yeah, I think James McAchuck had a friend that knew the hotel owner.
Yeah, the co-writer was Doug McLeod is the one who knew the family. Yeah.
That's cool.
So what else do you do when you're stuck in a lodge in the middle of a snowstorm and you apparently don't really want to give your best effort to actually get out of there?
Take baths.
You actually first, you tell deeply personal sexual stories. Yeah. That's what you do.
What a weird story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Once when I was 16, I had this uncontrollable urge to want to do it for money. You know, like being a hooker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great story, Chrissy.
Yeah.
It is a story like on the commentary for the Blu-ray where James McAchuck is like, yeah, this has been embarrassing. And he's on there with the two leads, with Marty and Jenny. And Jenny's like, yeah, this isn't good.
I had two thoughts after hearing that story.
Okay.
My first thought was like, she didn't do this. This is not true, but she thinks this is a story that will be make her seem like cool and edgy. Like, oh, if I tell this, like, they'll know that I'm like, I'm a bad girl, you know, like I'm a baddie. And so she's concocted this story. And then my second thought was, as she's telling it, she realizes in telling it that she sounds like it that really it sounds like child abuse. And she's like, oh, so as she's telling her story about her being a baddie, she's also having regrets.
Yeah.
So that's why she just tells it. And at the end, she's like, well, a sip. Like, I guess that didn't have the intended. So I don't know. I didn't mind it because, you know, we've all been there and heard people tell weird stuff or weird stories, or ourselves have told a weird story.
Here's a funny story. And then you tell it and you're like, this is an overshare.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't read the room right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
And I guess, everyone thinks I'm odd now.
Mm-hmm. I guess my coworkers didn't need to know my bathroom habits. Okay. Well, he's going to put in my 2 weeks because
I'm out. I can't recover. Back.
Yeah. I cannot recover from this.
Yeah, I think she tells a story, I think, I think she's trying to make Marty horny.
Yeah.
He was horny before they got to the lodge.
Yeah, so he brought a bottle of wine.
She didn't have to say that story at all.
Yeah.
She just had to say, I'm going to go take a bath. He was like, I'll be right there.
Yeah. But before any of that can happen, he then runs into an old lady in the kitchen.
Is this where she bites him?
It's just after.
We're stranded here. We broke in so we wouldn't freeze.
Careful, babe. She bites.
No, it's okay. She's just scared.
You can't stay here. You gotta go now.
She talks. We can't go anywhere until tomorrow.
Look, really, we're... three polar bears, and we'd prefer to be out in the snow tonight. It's just that we thought we'd come inside and rough it a little bit if it's all the same to you.
You're not allowed here. This place is closed.
Then what are you doing here?
I ask the questions, girly.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. So after that kind of introduction, what do they do? Because clearly they have to be like, who is this lady? No, they hang out and watch her eat a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously. When you meet a creepy old lady, you're like, tell us more.
Mm-hmm.
And was it me or am I the only one? But I thought that sandwich looked delicious.
Yes. The way she attacked it, I was kind of like, that's got to be a good sandwich.
Yeah.
I mean, she's lived there alone for God knows how many years. She's perfected the sandwich.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. It looks thick. It looks like there's a lot in it. It doesn't look
there's
like
a crunch to it.
The crunch is definitely like iceberg lettuce, I bet.
Yeah.
And like tons of different meats and shit. But yeah, it definitely does look like a hearty sandwich.
Yeah, this is not a PB&J or like a little tiny grilled cheese. This is like, this has got stuff in it. And she
I also think from the state of her teeth, it's definitely not iceberg lettuce. It's chips. It's potato chips.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Those teeth are not reflective of any vegetables being in her diet.
Yeah, and being Canadian, they're probably all dress chips.
Okay.
Oh, you don't know what that is?
No.
Oh, shit, man. You got to, like, Google, like, Canadian snacks. All dress chips are, like our fucking president, I guess, of chips. And every time I go to the States, like, I have to, like, smuggle all dress chips for my American friends. Because, like, we have the ketchup chips, but I think you guys now also have ketchup chips, but they're different. They're not as good. But yeah, next time I'm in Los Angeles, I'll bring you some all dressed chips.
Okay.
Nice.
Excellent.
These chips you're talking about, those are not ketchup chips, right?
Correct.
Okay, because you did lose me at ketchup chips.
But you have ketchup chips now, is what I hear.
Yes, but I've never been like, oh, this chip would be great if it was, you know, just ketchup flavored, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well, you never know. Put it on your, you know, human skin meat sandwich.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. You never know.
It gives you that burst of citrus that you need when you're having like somebody's arm meat, you know?
Arm meat can be so bland.
Yes.
Oh, you got to dress it up. You got to dress it up.
Mm-hmm.
Can be very soft, though, depending on the arm. The old lady, by the way, is played by Georgie Collins.
Wait, what?
Yeah,
the old lady's not played by Mickey Rourke. Holy shit! I thought that was this dude's best performance. I was like, he is killing it as this old woman? Question mark.
Yeah, this was his lead up to Barfly, and it really, really, he went from this to Barfly. He's like, I'm ready.
He doesn't like to talk about it.
Yeah,
he never mentions this movie. It's not right.
Yeah. He was like, oh, I wanted more Wendigo. It's bullshit.
It's stupid.
We were supposed to wrestle. There was a whole wrestling scene in it. Yeah. And it was cut out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Georgie Collins, she would go on to appear in films like Rad and Bill Forsyth's Housekeeping. And she had been a theater actor. And she was like the head of a theater company in Canada. So that's how they got her. And boy, is she fantastic.
I love her a lot.
Yeah. She is amazing in this movie. Like, incredible.
I was telling Mark before we started recording that, like, I'll never forget the first time I watched this film and how unsettling the scene is of when you first see her. There's just something so disturbing that made me feel like terrified, because it's so dark. It's only illuminated by oil, like a single oil lamp. And it's just when he says, I think it's an old woman. I don't know. There's something about that that makes it very scary.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that she's just like crouched down, low lit, hair in front of her face, and not saying a single word and like unmoving is just so fucking uncomfortable. Like, I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
That is so, like, just the way that they executed that shot. I love it. I love it so much. And like immediately after, I was like Googling Georgie Collins. And yeah, she's from Calgary. So she's actually like from that area.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, she was honored by ACTRA Calgary in like 2005. And I think she passed away in 2017, maybe.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But her performance is just like fucking incredible. Like, I've never seen I think I watched Rad like once. I don't really remember it. I don't really care about BMX bikes. Is it BMX bikes?
Yeah.
It's about a lot more than BMX bikes, but I get why.
<It's a bike. laughs> So I don't know what her role is in that, but
it's really a metaphor for all of our lives, but
yes. but it's not BMX Bandits. That's a different movie.
That's,
yeah, she's in a lot of cowboy related things. Did you notice that?
She is. And though she says, because they interview her on the Code Red Blu-ray, and she talks about that at that time, she played a lot of old ladies.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, she's in her early 50s at the time of they made this movie. But she just was always tasked with playing old ladies.
Well, that's ancient in Hollywood terms.
Correct.
Like 50, even, oof. Pull them out of the grave. We need an old woman.
Right. Like, and even independent Canadian productions adhered to that Hollywood logic.
That's right.
And they also said, let's cast some 30-year-olds as 20-year-old kids. Which is, again, Hollywood logic. But her performance, and this is not to say anything negative about anybody else in the movie, but when you get to her, as you're saying, Yasmina, in that shot, it's like you see an actor who is so locked in mm-hmm. that she is on another level than everyone else.
Yeah, yeah.
The other three actors had done a good job, the shopkeeper, everybody was, you know, but mm-hmm. when she comes in...
Chrissy.
Well, you know...
Did you see a vampire? You're like, oh, come on. Well, come on, Chrissy. Come on.
That's a tough monologue to sell, as we already talked about. It's a tough one to sell. You're happy for the, you know, as an actor, you're happy for the monologue. You're like, whoa, what is this, like 2 pages? And then you read it and you're like, oh, damn, okay. Well, how do I sell this one? But she does somehow, even though... as that clip showed, she has an unnerving presence, but they seem okay with her. So okay enough to be like, show us to our rooms, old lady.
Yeah, yeah. I guess except for Jenny, she's the rational one of the group, the sensible one, and skeptical as well. She's always like, I don't know. And the other two are just like, la, 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 we're idiots. Yeah.
This should be mm-hmm. fine. Let's get a bedroom yeah. and see if we can have sex. Because yeah. as we're soon going to learn, Marty is pretty keen on Chrissy, as we talked about. And Jenny is going to learn that pretty quickly here that her relationship is garbage.
Yeah.
Do you want to sleep with her?
Sound like you own me or something, you know.
I didn't say that.
No, you implied it. What is it with you anyway? I mean, how come you always want to start something all the time?
I'm sorry. I don't know why I get like that.
I mean, I got a right to live my life the way I want, and I thought we had that all settled in the beginning.
What about me?
Well, you live it the way you want. Just remember who pays the bills, that's all.
Oof. Oh, man, Marty. What?
Wow.
An asshole.
I know.
Yeah.
That guy. Oh, my God. Just remember who pays the bills. That is, like, actually, I think really good writing because it's like, oh, you do whatever you want, but don't piss me off, which is just like, ugh, that is gross.
Yeah. And then, like, I remember the first time watching this film, I felt, like, significantly uncomfortable watching her, like, placate him. As
yeah.
well.
Oh, and, yeah. Like, why is she apologizing?
But then at the end of the movie, man, like it's so gratifying when she's like, you should have listened to Jenny. And it's like, boom. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Marty takes a weird ride, but he's a real dirtbag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But, and him and what's his name? Ord.
Yeah. Murray Ord.
Mm-hmm. Murray Ord. He and Georgie Collins worked on another film together called Cowboys Don't Cry.
Wow.
So yeah, they had worked together before. And yeah, Georgie Collins, lots of cowboy stuff. Lonesome Dove, Gunsmoke.
Yep.
She was in a fucking Olsen Twins movie, How the West Was Fun.
Oh.
Oh wow.
I've seen it.
Mark has seen it.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh huh.
This is the only thing I've seen her in though. But yeah. Like some westerns.
That's amazing.
But with all of Marty's arrogance and bravado, he cannot make a good decision. Mm. He is constantly making bad decisions
yep.
and is completely useless.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a rare mix to have the ego of someone that can own a room and is totally in control of his life. And he's a lawyer. Yeah. But he, like, at every turn, the guy can't even walk through snow. He crawls like a baby yeah. through snow,
yeah.
as though that's a good strategy.
Yeah.
It's
It's usually one of my favorite kinds of characters, characters with unearned confidence. I always love that in movies, in anything. But Marty just got on every last nerve. You know, he's the worst.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Chrissy takes a bath, and it looked enjoyable, but it is sadly her last bath that she will ever take. Mm-hmm. Because, and now, you mentioned earlier, Yasmina, that on the cover of your VHS, you have the old lady's son. But isn't it the son that dunks her? Is that not her son, or is her son in the basement?
Yeah, so I think at one point she does say sons, plural, in the film. And the Wendigo spirit, I guess, that's possessing the one, mute son that's, kept in the basement is the guy that's on the cover of my VHS. Mm-hmm. And then the other one, the other son, I guess, kills Chrissy.
Yeah, that son is Danny, and that's actually played by Bill Grove, who's actually a stuntman. So that's why they hired him, because he then performs a stunt later on. But in this, he takes Chrissy and dunks her in the bath, and not in a fun way. And not in that fun way.
Not a fun dunk.
Not like in a carnival way where someone threw a ball and dunked into the bath. Yeah, no, not that way.
Yeah, no.
More like a slash your throat and dunk your head underwater kind of way.
Yeah. The less fun way. Dunk your head underwater, knock you out, and then drag you to an indoor ice bar? Ice lodge? Lodge inside of a lodge? All the while the old lady's smoking a doob?
Yes. I'm telling you, dream job. You make your sons do all the work. You eat whenever you want. You don't have coworkers. God. Oh.
Yeah. It is a great.
Why do I apply, dear Lodge? Where do I apply?
And it is the first time we get a look at the creature that's inside the ice bar in the basement, I guess.
Ice bar?
And it, as Malachek has explained in 2008, he talks about how the fact that the budget for the movie basically went out on them. And so there was further designs, as Yasmina, you mentioned earlier, he had a different plan for the movie. He says, quote, "The biggest problem we had is halfway through the producer that I had, he screwed up and we ran out of money. In the original script, there was a lot more in the second half. All of a sudden, halfway through the creature, the producer came in and said, you've got him for half a day. I said, half a day? What do you mean? Because he figured a lot more in the script, but that's all we got him for. So we took the poor guy, stuck him in the costume, and we shot a bunch of angles with him. And that was about all we could do.
Oh, damn. Yeah, I had read that, that there were scenes, additional scenes that were cut, but I don't think they even got the chance to shoot those scenes. And yeah, at the point when, because it was filmed under a tax shelter, and at one point when the budget was starting to get pretty low, the producer gave them an out. He was I'll give you an option to bail on this film now. Mm-hmm. And he was no fucking way. We're halfway through. We're just going to finish it. And then from that point on, they kind of just went with the flow. So a lot of people, I've read reviews where people are it's disjointed. There's plot holes. There's, I feel a lot missing in this film that could have been great, whatever. And I think Jim might agree with that, but then I still feel that the outcome still delivered a great suspenseful, ominous kind of mystery movie.
Yeah, it's a thinker.
Yeah, and then, but I did read that there was a whole ending planned where there was going to be a fight scene, a chase sequence between Jenny and the Wendigo.
They wanted to
shoot something on the roof, of the Deer Lodge. But I don't know if this is true or not, because as you said, you can't trust IMDb trivia. I read this on his LinkedIn. Yeah, I fucking found Jim McAtuck on LinkedIn.
Me too.
Oh, nice. And did you see that he said that he's working on Ghost Keeper 2?
He talks about it in the commentary that he has an idea for the sequel. And actually the sequel idea would be that they would return to the lodge, but not the characters, the actual actors playing themselves would return to the lodge, and then things fall out from there.
Interesting.
So it's kind of like a new nightmare kind of
new nightmare,
idea.
Oh,
although
cool.
I think the actress that played Chrissy is also passed anymore.
On. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. That's too bad. I know Reva Spear is a fitness instructor, maybe, but she is a voice actor as well. She does a lot of anime.
She lives in, I think she still lives in Los Angeles. I think.
Oh, okay, well, Los Angeles.
She had moved to Los Angeles as of the recording of the commentary, but whether or not she still lives in LA, I don't know. I haven't put on my PI hat and tracked her down, but I'll do it.
Nice. She's badass. Her and Georgie Collins, like, for me, like, make this film.
Totally agree. Because she also, at first, you know, like we described with her and Marty, she's overly apologetic and seems almost like she's been bamboozled into this situation, right? And but that maybe it's because they had to change the story. The mystery around her mental health, her mother, like all of that stuff, like she becomes such a more interesting, richer character. And she does an incredible job of not overplaying her hand, just being real subtle with it. Mm-hmm. Almost like the straight man next to Georgie Collins's character, who's kind of like really going for it a little bit towards the end there. So, I mean, I love watching the two of them interact with each other.
Well, I think Reva had more of a very kind of a realistic style, and she was just very grounded. And that's what I think is so amazing about Georgie Collins's performance, because she is really kind of, you in the wrong hands, this could have been an extremely broad and annoying character. Because she's kind of going for kind of a big character, but keeping it, you know, grounded a little bit. And I think it's a great, Reva is important to be able to bounce off of this person, because she's keeping things really like very real, very grounded. And it allows Georgie to kind of like go a little bit further with her kind of wild old lady character.
Yeah, I really like how the two characters are a reflection of each other as well. Like, and like they kind of insert that into the script. Like when, I guess she is the ghost keeper, Georgie, like when she says to Jenny, like, I like you, you're tough. And we as the audience know that she hasn't like reached her toughness like yet at the beginning when she's still like placating Marty and stuff. But yeah, I relate a lot to Jenny's character. I'm the sensible one out of like the group of friends that I have. And whenever she has, you know, like she's like skeptical and like questioning like whether or not they should go into this place. Even like one of my favorite lines of hers is when they first get to the lodge and they're like, oh, there's nobody here. Like it's like desolate and like just so like fucking idiotic to say that. And Jenny's just like, if nobody's here, why is the heat on? Like she's intelligent, you know, and but I feel like Marty and Chrissy, you know, like they overlook that. They don't, you know, like really like respect her like as a human being or like as a friend. And yeah, like you, I just love that Georgie Collins's character can like see that in her like immediately, which is why she, you know, tries to coerce her into taking over the Ghost Keeper like character, like role of the Deer Lodge. But yeah, those two women, I just absolutely love them in this film. Like they definitely carry this movie.
Yeah, and I think she does try to be the voice of reason, maybe except small exception when Chrissy disappears, she doesn't go, we should find Chrissy. But she and Marty are both kind of like, eh. In fact, Marty says she must be out exploring. Like, dude, you had a snowstorm where you're like, we should just go inside and hang out. But you're like, she went off in the middle of the night, decided to explore. I don't know. And then
but
Jenny
you could
finds,
argue that Jenny didn't like Chrissy to begin with. So she was willing to just make an exception.
She's willing to let that go. Yeah, on top of that, though, Jenny, then that's when she sees the old lady talking to herself. And then she goes, wow, that's weird. Here's what I'll do. I'll go to sleep. Like, wait, what? Like, oh, that's, oh, look at this old lady just talking to herself, like, in a creepy whisper. Good night, everyone. I'm just gonna catch some Z's.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's one thing where, like, yes, most of the time Jenny's the voice of reason. But there, I'm like, what? So again, we're talking about being stuck in the middle of nowhere. What is your level of comfort that you can go to sleep at? For me, that's
she had popped a melatonin about an hour before and was I am committed to this.
Isn't that what you do when you're like different time zone, vacation, melatonin?
Yeah, right.
You're like,
right.
I cannot avoid sleep.
She's like, I have no choice. The melatonin's bringing me down.
Yeah.
I'm actually curious, like, where they came from, like, where they live, like, because they're on vacation, but like, where are they vacationing from?
I'm going to just go ahead and say Sarasota, Florida.
That's right. It makes sense. It tracks. Marty does then go out in the morning and tries to start the Ski-Doo, but nope, it won't start. There's a disconnected tube, which can only mean, I don't know, but I don't know what that means at all. But Mark, I assume
it's
you
the
know.
Cable to the spark plug. It's been cut. So okay. You're not going to get any spark to the one cylinder that snowmobile has.
See, there you go. I am as useless as Marty, which is why I can't stand him. Mm-hmm. He reminds me too much of myself.
Mm-hmm. See, you relate to Marty. I relate to the shopkeeper because I, too, overthink things that I've said to people. And I probably would trek through the snow to make it right because I'd be like, why did I say that? I'm such an idiot. I've got to find them and tell them I was just kidding or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, and he does start to make his way over there, but not before Jenny shares tea with the old lady because, again, she's very trusting of everybody. And she's allows herself to get, you know, used by this. And she's knocked out by the tea for what I can only assume is about 10 minutes because Marty's still trying to fix the Ski-Doo. So it's not a long lasting, you know, whatever she put in the tea, it doesn't last long. Mm-hmm. She wakes up in the basement. She learns that that only women can care for a Wendigo. Mm. Finds the Wendigo in the ice bar where he's hoarding the vodka, I guess. I don't know. Setting up his DJ set later. I'm not sure. I don't know. It's been a while since I've been to an ice bar. And then he's chased by the old lady's other son and his chainsaw, only to knock him off the balcony to his death, which Marty sees. And then he loses it. He loses his mind.
Yeah, it goes crazy, I guess. Yeah.
He puts axle grease on his face.
Yeah.
And starts talking about his dad.
Which you're like, Marty, I don't have the emotional commitment to you as a character to learn about your past. Yeah. I don't want to, I don't care what an asshole's life was like.
I felt like he was just gaslighting Jenny even more because he's like, oh, you think you're crazy and, you know, you had difficulty with your mom? Wipe. My dad was also tough. Like, he always had, he's just gaslighting her.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the fucking worst.
He is.
He is the worst, yes. Ugh.
You know, everybody at the firm hates him too. They're like, oh, fucking Marty, stupid
hope
ass.
Hope he gets killed on that vacation.
Seriously, hope he drives that Ski-Doo over the cliff. Like, everyone hates him.
When he works at like the Pepsi Corporation in Sarasota, Florida, they're like, God, I hate Marty. What a dick. A guy, he never comes back from Canada.
Did you hear that Marty died on that snowmobiling trip? Also, there's birthday cake in the kitchen if you guys want to go get some.
Yeah.
Oh, is it February birthdays? Oh, that's great. Yeah.
I'm going to get his office. He didn't deserve that one.
Also, yeah, Marty would take a vacation in the middle of winter from Florida to the winter.
Yeah.
What an idiot. He deserves it. People come here in the winter.
Yeah. Always go in the opposite direction, that guy.
Oh, yeah.
Why didn't you just go to Port Richey, Florida, like everybody else? Deep cut. That's where my grandparents always went.
Yeah. Oh, that's where you snowbird. Yeah. Anyway, he walks off into the woods looking for help, I guess. And if he'd stuck to the path, he would have come across the shopkeeper, but he doesn't. He goes a new direction. So the shopkeeper comes into the lodge. He doesn't last long. He's just another body to murder. Yeah. He's looking for them.
Yeah.
He's looking for the people that came into my shop.
Yeah.
I need to let them know we have a 2-for-1 special.
Yeah.
And we got more coffee. I got more coffee for you.
I got more coffee.
Come back.
I just
got
some snow pants.
Yeah. I'm Canadian. I'm just being me.
Yeah.
Have some more coffee.
Want some maple leaf cookies? Oh, God.
Yeah.
They taste like tomato chips, but in the shape of a maple leaf. It's a real assault on your taste buds.
Oh, man.
But then Jenny, the old lady, takes him out, and then she sets her sights on Jenny.
Don't step any closer. It's loaded.
Doesn't work. Never has.
You can't be sure of that.
You wouldn't kill me. You couldn't kill me. That's something a crazy person would do. And you're not crazy, are you?
What do you know about that?
Oh, I know a lot of things. Oh, and you know who I am.
What are you talking about?
You don't want to be crazy, do you? Think of me. I'm a mother. Just a mother.
My mother's dead.
Is she? Oh, no. I'm your mother. Look at me. I'm your mother.
No!
Come to me, Jenny.
My mother's dead.
No, Jenny.
Even her voice is creepy.
Mm-hmm. Voice yeah. So creepy.
So creepy.
And I think this is like the moment where like, anybody, if you're on board, this is going to make you more on board. If you were not sure, this is where you're like, what is happening? I don't know. What are you talking about with the mother, which has only been hinted at? Like, but I think this is kind of the movie's brilliance, where it's like it leaves a lot for you to think about. And so I'm asking, what is happening right now at this moment? I'm not sure what she's talking about.
Like, maybe she's her metaphorical mother. Like with all of Marty like going crazy and everything, like is he possessed by another Wendigo? Like there is just, what is this, a David Lynch movie, you know? I wonder, was he a fan of Ghost Keeper? But these are questions that I ask but don't get hyper focused on to get sure. the answer.
Yeah
because there's so many other great things about the movie, like its atmosphere and its mood and the terrifying wintry location. But I don't have answers for those.
I don't know either. I don't really have a good answer either. But I think that what sells it though for me is, again, that music and the sort of atmosphere of the music, and also Georgie Collins's performance, which I just love. And I think it's that time.
Think about things that you love. I'm your mother. Think about these things. Think about things that you love. Don't you have things that you love?
You love my sandwiches.
If you would share your sandwich, we might. But you're going whole hog on that sandwich. We're not getting this because this used to be a hog place. Hog lodge.
Hog lodge.
We're going to talk about things we love and things we hated about Ghost Keeper. Mark, let's start with you. What is something you loved?
I know this is kind of obvious, but I really love the setting. I love that it's a practical set, that they shot it in this lodge. I love the sound design. You hear the creaking of the floorboards. That one little scene where the door keeps hitting and there's a hanger hanging on the doorknob. And it just keeps rattling. It's super creepy and effective, even though it's so simple. Mm-hmm. But like, why is there a hanger on the outside of a door? They did a lot of great work working with the set that they had. The fact that they lit it with kerosene lamps instead of using a lot of lighting, it gives it an incredible mood. And you get this in The Shining too, but anytime that you have like, hey, this place is empty, let's go explore. I love when movies do that. I know it's kind of a trope, but I'm always in like, what are we going to find? How scary can it be? And they take their time and they build this great atmosphere that continues throughout the movie. So I loved the setting that they were working with.
Mm. Yeah, it's great. It is great. And in that scene, it's so like she goes in, takes the hanger off the door. And the window is open, and like you see all this like snow blowing in, and you're like, my thought was just because the times we're living in, you're like, man, oh, is that fake snow? And I was like, oh no, that was all just real wind and snow, because they don't have money for any of these kinds of effects. Mm-hmm. That was all just very real stuff, and that's what really sells the entire thing. It's just very real.
It's just Alberta.
Yeah, all those empty chairs, they're just lined up to the windows. Like they were like that was just there, and it. And it really is an extremely effective location. Yasmina, what is something you loved?
Another thing I do love is the fact that a daytime shot was terrifying. So when she does go into that room and the window is open, the eye that's like watching her, Georgie Collins' eye, maybe an homage to Black Christmas. But I just love that it's scary as fuck and it's during the day.
Yeah.
So I do admire that. And just being the nerd that I am, I love all the connections of the cast and crew. Like I mentioned earlier that Georgie Collins and Murray Ord were in that film together. There's a few other connections too, like the co-writer Doug McLeod. He produced the Ray Bradbury theater series, mm-hmm. and Georgie Collins was in an episode. And I also really enjoy that the DP, John Holbrook, mm-hmm. I love that he shot Ghostkeeper, given its mountainous area, because he was the second unit DP on First Blood, which was filmed just a few kilometers over in British Columbia. So I like little connections like that.
Mm-hmm. And it was his contention to really shoot everything with natural light. And
oh, nice. I love that.
That was the big thing for him, is that he shot everything with all the light. So, you know, and then even like the scenes where they're going down the hallway and she's showing them their rooms, just lit with candles. Like he would just use natural lighting, didn't use a lot of artificial lighting. And it gives such a beautiful atmosphere to it as well, on top of the music and everything else.
And like, I do hate winter, and being from Alberta, like I do like mention a lot about like how much I loathe like the snow, but I do acknowledge like how beautiful that area is. And like those mountainous like areas of like the West Coast, like in the summer and springtime, like absolutely gorgeous. Gorgeous landscapes, but there's just something about them in the winter that adds such an eerie, like an eeriness to it that is terrifying. And mm-hmm. just those opening shots of literally like when they just show the title on the screen, Ghostkeeper, and it's just shots of the mountains. Like it's, I've always been like fascinated with how you don't fuck with Mother Earth, you know, like mm-hmm. it's, dangerous. And that's what the shopkeeper even like tells them, that it's mm-hmm. like dangerous out there in the mountains, and reminds me of like Mount Everest and everything. And so it is like beautiful, and just those singular shots, like it just like already like sets the mood of the film. So it's like terrifying and beautiful at the same time.
Yeah, they even shot the movie in sequence, which is an interesting choice. Yeah. But I have to think and of course screws them up later when they realize they're running out of money and then they can't shoot some of these extra scenes. But I have to think that part of the reason was because of the snow. As Mark said, Marty crawls through the snow. There's all those like tracks. So you're trying to keep all that looking pristine as long as you can. And then as it goes on, then you can kind of mess with it. But if you're shooting stuff at the end and then you go back to shoot something from the beginning in the snow, how do you redo the snow? I have to think it's something to do with that. But it's just a real, mm-hmm. it's an interesting choice that they shot it in sequence, but I guess it's because of the snow.
Mm-hmm.
Erica, what's something you loved?
I agree with everything mentioned so far. I think the only thing I would add to it is I like that it wasn't over-explained. You know, a lot of times, mm-hmm. especially, you know, now in newer, you know, thrillers or horror movies, it's like, oh, you know, you'll have the character looking out the window going, we can't go out there. Look at the wind. Look at the, and it's like over-engineered.
Yeah.
Or we should go because this woman's scary and I knew it. Like everything's over explained. And
hey, old lady, do you have an extra sandwich? Like they're not like over, they're just letting her go to town on the sandwich, you know?
Yeah. So
I like not even asking, like, could I just get a little nibble on that?
Just like, slice like an end off there and I can just get a crust end. I don't even mind.
Yeah. Like as we hear stomach grumbling.
I'm sorry I interrupted you. Did you have more? No. Okay.
No, that was it.
Okay. Yeah. For me, it's just an echo, but like Georgie Collins' performance is just, it's so good. But let's switch to things we hated. Mark, what did you hate?
I mean, Marty.
God, he's the worst.
How that guy has gotten this far in life, I don't know.
Yeah, how did he and Jenny even hook up? Like, come on, Jenny. You can do better. Come on.
Work party? Alcohol?
Yeah.
Something. Yeah. It's lonely at PepsiCo in Sarasota, Florida.
Yeah, for that other place in Florida you mentioned.
Yeah. Port Richey. Oh. Everybody's too old.
He's on the legal team at Pepsi, so they're pretty, you know.
Dry.
Gosh.
Wow. And very sure of himself. I think something that unnerves me is that he's so cocky about how funny he is, and he's not very funny. Like
no,
that clip where he talks about, well, we're just polar bears, but I guess we'll rough it inside. And I'm like, just your jokes are not landing with anyone. No one in the room, no one in the audience, just rough. But I mean, that's part of his character, but it's
also
just...
at the start of this, like, he couldn't have like kicked down like a third snowmobile rental.
Yeah, like, dude. Yeah.
Jenny's saying, wait, where's my snowmobile? You'll just ride on the back with me. What?
Yeah.
What? Babe. Aren't you a lawyer at Pepsi?
Yeah. I also think he was more mad about the cable because he's like, great, now I'm going to lose my deposit. So much for the security deposit on this. I don't know how to fix this. Damn it.
That's why he just wanders in the woods, because he's just like, I got to fix this thing because I can, they have my credit card information.
Yeah. I'm going to get charged up the nose through this, or through the nose, out the nose, up and around.
I'm going to be charged through the nose. That does sound terrifying. I don't want that. Charge me through the nose. That's bad. Yasmina, what did you hate?
His snow pants are not a sexy look, too, by the way.
Oh, no. Oh. No. He does not pull off the snow pants like Jenny does.
No.
I guess, like, I would have liked to see a complete film, like his original vision and a supernatural element, like the Wendigo tale, because that is a story that isn't overused in horror films. Mm-hmm. Like I think there is a movie called Wendigo, and the only other one I can think of is like that incredible movie, Frostbiter.
Yep.
But
Yeah,
it would be interesting to see if a Ghost Keeper 2 does happen, because that's the only thing negative I would have to say about it is I wish that they delved more into the Wendigo legend and story and everything. But it was 1980 Adam Money, I guess. Like, it was his first film. Like,
but as Wendigo movies go, this is fairly lacking in Wendigo.
I know
we're not at final questions, but are all of you familiar with Wendigos? Because
Wendigos.
I was hearing that word and that lore for the first time ever in my life. Saying it right? Wendigo?
Wendigo.
You're saying it right. That's it. Wendigo.
Where do I put the Wendigo?
You're like, that's the Australian version.
The Wendigo ate my baby. I'm making Ghost Keeper 3 the comedic version.
There you go.
Right. Like the original Jaws 3 People Zero concept.
Oh my god, I just watched that. Fucking Dennis Quaid was high on cocaine the whole time.
Oh, Jaws 3D, fantastic. But I would still say Jaws 4. Mwah. What a masterpiece.
Personal Vendetta.
The shark follows them to the Caribbean.
Yep.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Nobody
holds a grudge like a shark.
No. Nope.
Everybody knows
Maybe
that.
A Wendigo.
Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know if it's because I'm Canadian is why I've heard of the Wendigo like legend, but I believe it's an Aboriginal like myth, like from like Algonquin, and Algonquin is like a part of like Northern Ontario, but definitely. I mean, that is a myth legend that should be explored more in horror films, and at least Ghost Keeper gives us a start. And it would be nice to definitely see more of that like in a sequel, but I guess that's the only thing I would say negative about the film is I wish that they had the budget and time allotted to explore that more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what he was going for.
Yeah, and like what her, like Georgie Collins is like what the Ghost Keeper's connection is to the spirit and everything. So that's about it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely, this is going to send me down a Wendigo
wormhole
of different movies. Let's switch to favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
I have a lot of favorite scenes, so this one's kind of a tough one. But the one that stuck with me, because I watched this movie twice, and both times I was like, wow. It's a scene when Chrissy falls off her snowmobile. Because when she gets up and she's asking, am I okay? Marty tries to make a joke. He can't make any good jokes. And he says, oh, except for the broken nose and a few missing teeth. And she goes, stop it. Am I okay? I think she had a small compression fracture in her spine and can't feel anything, because how would you not know if you're okay?
Yeah.
Like you would feel pain if you weren't
frozen.
Yeah. Maybe she's completely frozen, or maybe she just has she can't feel anything. Her nerves are completely shot and she's incapable of feeling. But I thought it was an odd line of questioning.
I think we're all on the same page that Marty is the one who's incapable of feeling, but I hear you. Like,
he doesn't emote.
Does not.
Except when all of a sudden he's got oil all over his face and he wants to talk about his dad. Yeah. Dear God.
Yeah, Marty's got some daddy issues.
Big time.
But yeah. Yasmina, what was your favorite scene?
Yeah, I can't reiterate it enough, is the first time that you see Georgie Collins. Sure. Like, it's just, it's so unsettling. And I just love that that scene, like, caused such a visceral reaction in me the first time that I watched it. And highly, highly recommend, like, just because of that scene. It's just so good. And Georgie Collins, rest in peace, seriously. Like, and you were saying earlier, like, the dynamics between, like, her performance compared to, like, the other characters. Like, you know when you're watching a movie and you see that in an actor and you're like, that person comes from a theater background. You just know it. Mm-hmm. Like, and she has been, like, part of, like, the Calgary, like, theater community, like, since the 60s. So I think that definitely, like, is present when you see her in this film. Yeah, that's definitely my favorite scene when you first see her. It's like, what is that? Oh my God.
In the Code Red Blu-ray, when they talk with her, she has moments where she just slips into the character and just starts talking as the character. And it's,
I love her.
Fascinating to watch. It's like, I don't know if like I got a lot of nuggets from the interview, but like just her going into character all of a sudden was like, damn. Like, you know, like it's really
classic interesting. Classic theater kid. They're like, and scene, and back. Back to Georgie. That's how it's done, people. Yeah. What a baddie.
Totally.
Yeah, but it's when they do it constantly. You're like at breakfast, they're doing it. Like you're in the grocery store and they go into a scene. You're like, guys.
She knows her limits. She's a professional.
She's like, I got a new monologue I want to try out. You're like, oh, okay. Okay.
She's like, and scene. That was the monologue.
That was it. Your reaction. Boom. Yep. Gotcha. Got ya.
That's theater, baby.
That was a theater trap. Erica, what was your favorite scene?
I also liked those scenes. And I'll add to it, and you mentioned it earlier, Yasmina, when she's having the conversation and Jenny is looking down over the banister and she's having the conversation with unknown character. We can assume it's one of the sons, but she's holding that lamp and the way it's shadowing her face, when she looks up, her eyes look different because the way the shadow then hits her chin versus the top, it makes her eyes look huge. Like, unreal for a second, just when she looks up, just the way the shadow is. And I thought that was such a creepy, cool thing to put in there because it did sort of have that, like, oh, is that the shadow or was that her? Like, the way the light sort of tricks your eyes. I thought that was really cool.
It's
my favorite scene.
Mine is simply the scene we talked about where Chrissy's killed and the old lady is smoking a big joint. The way that that's cut together, it, like, you kind of see Georgie Collins, like, smile for the first time as the character just as she's being killed. And she's just down there, having the singular joy of smoking a joint alone.
Yeah. While somebody else feeds your kid. It's right. Clear. It is truly the best feeling.
Yeah.
Kids are taken care of. Everybody's fed and happy. Wendigo's going to sleep like a baby tonight because his belly's nice and full. And just have her join.
And I'm going to put myself to sleep so that I don't get woken up by the loud DJing going on at the ice bar downstairs. Yeah.
Yep.
Because I got to rest. I have to rest.
That's right.
Let's switch to final questions. Yasmina, this is probably for you because I have to ask. In Canada, when you go to stores, do you get free coffee? Is that just a thing?
Not since Tim Hortons fucking took over the country.
Okay.
Which, by the way, is shitty coffee.
Oh!
Like, Yeah, I'm going to say it. Tim Hortons coffee fucking sucks.
Okay.
Like, McDonald's coffee is better.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a bold stance for a Canadian. That is, yeah, because you either are, you put Tim Hortons on a pedestal or, mm-hmm. you know, you bring it down. Our version, of course, would be Starbucks, which also has shitty coffee. So, mm-hmm. and I can't wait for those advertising dollars to come flowing in.
I thought you were going to say all dress chips.
Well, I can't. I am excited for those for sure.
Yeah.
Now, we'd already talked about the sandwich, but where was the old lady keeping all that bread?
Yeah, she had a kitchen.
Yeah. Where's that bread? There's just like a can of like peaches or something. Look, there. It's like, where's
Ryan?
Where's...
You have kids. She hid it. That's her bread. Yeah. She has it hidden. Yeah. That is her bread. That is for her.
Yep.
So that bread is hidden. Yeah. What did she put out? A can of fruit, because that's what the kids should be eating. Can of peaches.
You have to find the can opener. That's on you.
Hands off my delicious bread and my chips. But you can have some fruit, son.
when you start a fire, do you find yourself singing a jaunty tune?
Always. Every time. Every time. I know we try to sing songs
singing
from
a racist tune now.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, it sets the tone for all the conversation that happens around the fire. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But I try to sing songs from the 1980 version of Popeye. I try to, you know, any song from that.
Sure.
I think it's a perfect jaunty tune to bring to any campfire.
And I am what I am, what I am, and I am what I am, and that's all that I am, because I am what I am.
As a huge Robert Altman fan, I get it.
I always think when I'm lighting a fire, I always think of the song like, we didn't start the fire.
Right. The irony. The irony.
Look at me starting the fire.
See, that would have been too clever.
For Marty. Marty. Oh, yeah.
Also, the song wasn't out yet, so to be fair to him. when they party in the ice house, do they kick the Wendigo out, or they just make him hang in the corner? Like, where?
Well, he's doing the DJing in the corner, right?
Is he DJing?
So he's already, he's already like,
there.
Like in there. You know, he's got the glow sticks. He's got everything going. Yeah.
He's also a part-time bartender because mm-hmm. he uses the chainsaw to like cut the ice for the drinks.
Yeah. Right. Oh yeah. Ice sculptures.
Part-time bartender. Yeah.
There.
The line to get into that ice bar is long.
So long.
So
mm-hmm. I do not want to wait in line to be cold. No, thank you.
Nope.
That Wendigo does a sweet set. You're going to love it. And then in the middle, he does an ice sculpture with a chainsaw. This ice bar is lit.
Yep.
You're going to love it.
Yeah.
DJ Dingo.
DJ Dingo.
Oh, okay. So the important question. Isn't it possible to still feed the Wendigo bodies, but also run a successful ski lodge?
Mm.
It seems like they make a choice to do one or the other.
I think if all the Wendigo needs as payment for running the ice bar is to eat a person now and again, and it's going to take time to get through someone. So you don't have to kill every person that comes.
That's
in
what
there.
I'm saying.
You can do both. You just got to know certain people that check in, you've got to earmark and say, they look delicious.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our next one.
Yeah.
But I mean, outside of maintaining the inventory of the bodies, I think you can totally do it. I think you can be very successful.
I'm really curious about the inventory as well and how much flesh he needs in order to sustain himself. Because, I mean, nobody fucking goes to this place. Like, they even say, like, nobody's checked in since, like,
5 years.
Whatever year that was, like 5 years. So it's like, well, does he just have like stacks of frozen bodies in his ice bar?
Right.
Or when he gets low on flesh, like, do they venture out into like Lake town. Louise, the town?
Yeah.
You know, these are questions.
Yeah. He looks like a dude, and you only see him for like maybe 30 seconds total in the movie, but he looks like a dude who's always hungry.
Yeah.
Just always like,
for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you got a snack? You got like a hand I can nibble on?
Yeah. I hear you eating chips up there. This place is echoey. You said we were out of chips. She's like, God damn it. Crunch.
I'm down here in the ice bar, totally chipless.
Mom.
Yeah. Or maybe he's like a bear and he hibernates.
Yeah.
For like part of the year.
He's also part ghost, I guess. So, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it's feast or famine because they have the deer that had been recently caught, at least because it was bleeding in the garage. And right now you just had a run. You had two new bodies introduced, the storekeeper and Chrissy. So that's going to sustain you for a little while.
That'll get you through the winter.
I mean, hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll get you through.
I always say a deer and two dead bodies will get you through any winter. You know?
He always says that. Every year, every winter.
I gotta write that one down. I didn't realize that. Yeah, this is an important life tip. Pro tip, Ryan.
At the end of the movie, Jenny is sitting drinking tea, and I was wondering, is she drugging herself?
Oh, maybe. Might as well.
I might as well just like stay here forever.
In need of like a 10-minute nap. Mm-hmm. So I'm just gonna drink this tea because I presume it's still the old lady's tea.
Well, she had her melatonin, so she's...
Yeah, right.
It's night night time.
Yeah. Yep. All right, this is a New Year's movie. Do you think it should be watched on New Year's?
Anytime during the winter, if you're surrounded by snow. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that does occur on New Year's. But, yeah, I would say so. Mm-hmm. Add it to your New Year's evil... Bloody New Year's Ghost Keeper. There you go.
Yeah. I would say I feel like this is a New Year's Day.
You know?
Like in the daylight.
Yeah, you make yourself a big sandwich.
A giant sandwich. Ghost the biggest sandwich. Yeah.
Or you're at Ryan's New Year's Eve party where he's actively playing this, where everybody's like 10, 9, he's like, shh.
This is a great part. This is a great part.
It's a really good part. Be quiet. Jeez.
Let's get into some research. This is shot in December 1980, right around the time when John Lennon was shot, which is they bring up in the commentary. Mm. And the shoot was only 16 days long due to the limited budget.
Wow.
Shot on 35mm with a union crew. So that may also explain a little bit why it ate into their budget. As Yasmina had mentioned, it is a tax shelter movie. Makachuk explained, quote, at the time there was a tax shelter going on in Canada, Alberta being the center of the oil industry for Canada. There's a lot of guys who had a lot of money. So we had six guys who wrote us checks for about $100,000 each. The tax shelter meant that it made no money. They had the write-off. It was common in Canada from 75 to 85, and we call those the tax shelter movies. Scanners, The Gray Fox, Porky's, those were all made under that. That leaves the budget about $650,000, I've heard. I've also read like $800,000, somewhere around there. That's somewhere in there is the actual figure. As we mentioned, though, the money started to run out, and Yasmina had mentioned this before, but this is a quote from Makachuk. He said, they told us that the money is almost all gone. We had a choice of stopping the movie, pulling the plug, and I said, no way. We've gotten over half of it shot. So every day I made up the scene as we're going along, which is not the way to make a movie. That's what made it so uneven and without a terrific ending that we had hoped for. Editing the film did not take long because they did screen the film at Cannes in 1981. Huh. Otherwise, distribution for the movie was rather quiet until early 1982 when it made its North American debut at the Tivoli Theater in Calgary. And around that time, Makachuk had sold distribution rights. He sold them outside of Canada and the U.S. He sold them to England, Australia, Iceland, other territories. But apparently, this video company, he did get to Veel Video somehow, got their hands on it, I guess, somewhere around this time. I'm not sure how. But here's what he explained to the Calgary Herald in March of 1982. He said, our strategy was to sell the film out of the country before releasing it in Canada. If it's well received elsewhere, that will be a drawing card for audiences at home who are not necessarily impressed with Canadian films. But if it had bombed in Canada, it would never go abroad.
It was also like he started his own production company, Badlands Pictures.
Yeah, that's what the company behind this movie.
Yeah, and that was his first, like, I guess, like, production, as well as, like, being his first, like, directorial debut. I always fuck that word up, and I can't believe I just got it. Directorial debut. His head oddly shaped feet. I was reading more about, like, the production and all that, and Yeah, I think he worked in TV stations like across Canada.
Yeah. He'd been a cameraman to start.
Yeah. And then him, is, like, TV him and his buddy like did a couple shorts or something like that in the 70s. But he realized he just wasn't happy working in like TV stations and wanted to do movies. Yeah, his own films. And yeah, that's basically all I know about the production. But I really would love to know more about this video veal distribution.
Oh, yeah. We need to find out more.
Like,
about that.
I don't know anything about it. It's just like an enigma.
He does eventually move from Canada to L.A. And once he gets to L.A.,
yeah, in the 90s.
He becomes known there, not as a director, but as a writer. And he sort of writes TV shows and movies, and he doesn't particularly direct a whole lot more.
Yeah, he doesn't. He directed and wrote another Canadian movie called The Tower from 1985. And that is a sought after VHS. I'll tell you what. Oh. I think it's Emeritus. Emeritus is the one like is the label that put that out. But I've seen it go for like $200, maybe $300.
Wow.
It's a film that I've never seen. And he also did another, I believe, Emeritus film called Niagara Strip. The cover art on this VHS is glorious. Like, it's like a hand painted drawing. I love it so much. And he directed, I think, like, this is the last thing that he worked on before moving to Los Angeles. But I don't know if you guys remember this. It's a Canadian show called The Odyssey. And it had the girl from Now and Then in it. And I think it was kind of like a prelude to Stranger Things, because it's about this kid who winds up in a coma. It's also kind of like the Ray Bradbury story, The Halloween Tree, but it's a kid who's like stuck in a coma. But like, when he's in the coma, he's in this underworld. So there's like the underworld, and then there's the overworld, and his friends from like the overworld like go into the underworld to like help him like wake up. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I never like made that correlation between that and like Stranger Things and The Halloween Tree. But yeah, all Canadian kids remember that show. but yeah, then he moved to Los Angeles, and he actually co-wrote one of my favorite slashers, Blood Games.
Mm-hmm.
I love Blood Games. I actually just wrote a column for Rue Morgue on that film. And yeah, and then he just kept working in television.
Yeah, Blood Games is great. I think Vinegar Syndrome put out that Blu-ray. I have that one. Yeah, it's great. It's a blast. He does still find it difficult to sell the movie in Canada. In August of 1982, Makichuk told the Calgary Herald that First Choice, which is the Canadian HBO, if you will, offered him $12,000 for 5 years of rights to the film.
Wow.
To which Makichuk said, "I got $5,000 from the tiny island of Fiji and $25,000 from France." So he did not accept that deal. But he did make an agreement with America Cinema Marketing that was reported in November of 1982. The company that released another Canadian film that we talked about in this podcast, Reno and the Doc.
Mm-hmm. I've never heard of it.
Oh.
I'm a bad Canadian.
I don't know. We do have that one on VHS. And we did speak to the screenwriter, Charles Dennis, who wrote that movie and also wrote and co-stars in another Canadian film called Cover Girl, which we also covered on this podcast, released by New World Pictures, to which he does not understand why we like both those movies. But anyway, they also produced Pick Up Summer, which is another movie that New World Video released, as well as Hobgoblins.
Oh,
which is not New World, but a great film nonetheless. Whether it ever got a theatrical run in the United States, I am not sure. I cannot find signs or ads or anything of it being released in America. But I know that it is America Cinema Marketing that licensed the film to New World Video, because it's on the back of the box. And they released the movie in the U.S. in September 1986. And I'm bringing out a issue of Billboard magazine, which focused its attention on New World Video because it has a giant ad of the movie being also sold with Mountaintop Motel Massacre, which we also covered on this podcast. But this is some bloody hands serving it on a giant tray with a glass of orange juice.
That's cool.
This was the giant thing that they had. They also put out a couple other movies in September 1986 on New World Video. You also got to see Jake Speed.
Oh, Jake Speed.
The Incredible Sarah.
Ooh.
Agent on Ice, which I so far I have all these on VHS. And also, because they had also recently purchased the Learning Corporation of America, they also had the Rotation Diet, which was a book at the time, a diet book, and they had a video on it, so you could watch that, and they also released that. That's all that they are releasing in September 1986. And that's it. That is Ghost Keeper, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Yasmina, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh my God, thank you so much for having me.
Please, plug away. Tell everybody where they can find you and what you're working on.
So I am a columnist for Rumoring Magazine for the website. So you can read my column on rumorg.com. And my column is also a web series on Rumorg TV's YouTube page. And it's called The Rewind Zone. And I write and talk about my favorite underrated 80s and 90s films. I did actually write a column on Ghost Keeper many, many years ago. And I saw that CIP kind of like teased that they were going to be like releasing this film on their website, like just by like the image of the body that falls, the brother that falls. Mm-hmm. And I messaged them and I was like, yo, I fucking love Ghost Keeper. Like, no one talks about this movie. Please let me be involved. So everything like led up to this moment. But yeah, I also write essays and I do commentary for Terror Vision, Video and Records, Blu-rays. Recently, I just recorded a commentary for Sledgehammer. I'm a big Pryor Brothers fan. And former podcaster, you can listen to my podcast, Witchfinger Horror Podcast, on Spotify and all that bullshit. Mm-hmm. And what else do I do? I'm a programmer at the Paradise Theater in Toronto. So if you live in Toronto or the GTA, come watch some movies with me. I love just talking on the stage and giving all the like trivia facts, and I do prizes. Vinegar Syndrome Toronto store, give me stuff to hand out.
Yes.
You might win some Blu-rays.
That's right.
Maybe one of them will be the Ghost Keeper Blu-ray. And
come on, OCN.
What?
OCN, drop some free stuff. Let's go.
Oh, you said CN, and I was thinking like CN Tower, like in Toronto. Have you guys been to Toronto?
No.
No.
Mm-mm. No. Come visit. And eat our chips.
Yeah,
don't
drink
our Tim Hortons coffee because it fucking sucks.
As far as us, you can go to our website. You can learn all about us, all of our episodes, all of our articles, our t-shirts. If you want to support the show, you can buy a t-shirt. All that stuff is at our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. And that's where you can find everything about us. If you want to support the show, you can also give us a 5-star review, tell a friend, buy a t-shirt, whatever you want to do. That's where you can do it. Thank you so much, Yasmina. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast. Bye, everybody.
Peace out.
Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network, please select the link in the description.
Have you ever wanted to dive deeper into the horror movies you love? Beyond the Blood is a horror podcast for fans who want more than just surface-level screams. We do deep dives into the movies that shaped us, digging into director commentaries, behind-the-scenes stories, deleted scenes, and the special features that most people skip. Each episode is a love letter to the genre. We break down how these films were made, the creative risks that paid off or didn't, and the lasting impact they've had on the genre as a whole. From 70s slashers to modern nightmares, we celebrate the craft, chaos, and characters that keep us coming back. If you're the kind of fan who rewatches movies with the commentary on, or you simply grew up in the video store horror aisle, the Beyond the Blood podcast was made for you. New episodes every single week. Subscribe, let's dig deep. Welcome to the Beyond the Blood podcast.